ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter number 14, and Text number 25. 5:14:25. And the chapter is titled as The Forest of Enjoyment. The Forest of? Forest of?
Enjoyment.
Good. Wanted to catch you, but you are paying attention. Good. The Forest of Enjoyment. Actually, there is a little irony in the title. I am not saying that title is wrong. This is a little irony. Because when we go deeper into the chapter, we will realize actually that it is not enjoyment. It is a forest of misery. You know? And that's what we talk about. But title is, it's titled because it's an illusion that we are in enjoyment. But that enjoyment actually in reality is a misery. You know? So it's a forest of enjoyment. But Jagbharat is telling Rahuguna that it's a forest of fire, miserable fire. So we'll pick that up as we go. Yeah. So let's read the translation, the Sanskrit. 25. I'm just going to read this. I just don't know this meter. It's too difficult for me. I'll just read this out. Kvachich cha sita vata aneka devi adidevika bhautika atmiyanam dasanam pratinivarane kalpo duranta chintaya vishana aste. That's to transliteration. Kvachit, sometimes. Cha, also. Sita Vada Adi, such as cold and strong wind. Aneka, various. Adi Devika, created by the demigods. Bhautika, abhautika, adi bhautika, Prabhupada adds it. So bhautika, adi bhautika, created by other living beings. Atmiyanam, which is adi atmika, created by the body and mind. Dasanam, of conditions of misery. Pratitivarane, in the counteracting. Akalpa, unable. Duranta, very severe. Chintaya, by anxieties. Vishana, morals. Aste, he remains. Translation in Prabhupada. Translation. Being unable to protect himself from the threefold miseries of material existence. So being unable to protect himself from the threefold miseries of material existence, the conditioned soul becomes very morose and lives a life of lamentation. These threefold miseries are miseries suffered by the mental calamity at the hands of the demigods, such as freezing wind and scorching heat, miseries offered by other living entities, and miseries arising from the mind and body themselves. Okay. The so-called happy materialistic person is constantly having to engage the threefold miseries of life, called Adidaivika, Adiyatmika, and Adibhautika. Actually, no one can counteract these threefold miseries. All three may assail one at one time, or one misery may be absent and the other present. Thus, the living entity is full of anxiety, fearing misery from one side or the other. The conditioned soul may be disturbed by at least one of these three miseries. There is no escape. And that's a very punchy ending of the Gopal Pramshara Prabhupada, that there is no escape. No escape from what? The threefold miseries. Adi Bhautika, Adi Atmika, and Adi Devika. Om Agyanti Grandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmaya Shri Guruve Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavani Paschatyadesa Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gauravantavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So let's just set the scene first. What is the context of today's verse? At the moment, we are looking at the... Yeah, maybe the kids have to be controlled a little bit because it will distract me as well. Either be at the screen or be at the camera. But I think they don't need to be anywhere. No? The camera is just out of functioning. Yeah, so just sit down there for my own benefit. Yeah? Otherwise, I'll get distracted. Thanks, kids. Yeah, so this. So at the moment, we are looking at the multi-life journey of Jagat Bharat. Bhagavatam tells us... Many times people have this question whether there is life after death, and whether and equally on that note, you know, whether there was life before death. Here we see Bhagavatam giving us the pastime of, or not the pastime, but the lifeline of somebody in three different consecutive births. So what to talk about, you know, whether there was life before birth, there is actually a life before the birth of the last birth. So Jagat Bharat Maharaj got attracted to the deer, as we know. Then being attracted to the deer at the last moment of his life, he took the birth as a deer, that's the second life. And then the third life is at the moment which we are talking about, which is life as the sage, Ramana Jagat Bharat, you know, who is of course a very highly elevated devotee. So three lives of Jagat Bharat is given. Now when we look at the persona, when we look at the personality type of Jagat Bharat, in modern times, you know, the word that comes to mind is an introvert. Of course, he's an highly elevated sage, but people will label such personalities an introvert, no? or as a reticent. No? Somebody who keeps to himself. Because he has been burned in his previous life by not being able to go back to Godhead and had to take a life as a deer. In this life, he has become very quiet. Quiet because he doesn't want to be unnecessarily getting entangled in any material affairs. So in order to avoid that, he just keeps to himself, you know, being introvert. Now, devotees are kind of like that. Sometimes we have to play this double role of being an introvert. You know, and I can speak for my own self. When I'm in the office, I tend to be very introvert because we want to keep away from all the, you know, the calamities that goes in the office. But when we are with devotees, we are an extrovert. We are bubbling, you know, to hear Krishna Katha and share Krishna Katha. So sometimes we play that double role. So here, Jagat Bharat is very, very silent, very reticent. Now, so what happens at, now in this particular section is that Jagat Bharat has been ordered by the king and his ministers to carry the palanquin of King Rahugana. So when Jagat Bharat is carrying the palanquin, you know, when he is walking, he sees ants on the ground, and of course devotees don't injure or kill any other animals unnecessarily. So of course he tries to avoid the ants. So when he is avoiding the ends, he is walking in a very haughtingly way, you know, in a very abrupt way, just to not to step on the ends. And because of his jerking movements, he jolts the palanquin. Now, of course, you know, the king doesn't like all these jerks that he is giving. It's just like, you know, when we are flying on the aeroplane, we want it to be very smooth. Sometimes we also get very nervous when there is turbulence. You know, we start chanting. Very sincerely, most of our best prayers used to be on the aeroplanes during the turbulent times. You know? So here, the king Rahugana is not very comfortable because of the jerking movement that is getting from Jagat Bharat. So because of that, you know, the king gets, of course, angry, and he rebukes Jagat Bharat and chastises him on the spot. Jat Bharat, being an exalted devotee, of course takes it, you know, as the mercy of the Lord. And out of his great compassion and kindness, you know, then he starts speaking. For someone who has been so silent all this while, when he finally starts speaking, absolutely profound philosophy pours out of his mouth. Very, very deep philosophy that goes on for a few chapters. And that is all because of his kindness to the king, Raghuvana. He speaks this eloquent philosophy, a very, very profound and deep philosophy. So the philosophy that he speaks initially is an allegory. Allegory, you know, in terms of a figurative or metaphorical story. He makes up a story about, and when you read, so that's where we are in this particular section of Bhagavatam, chapter 13, we are in chapter 14. So if you are studying Srimad Bhagavatam, this section, then one has to study chapter 13 and 14 side by side. You almost need to have two books, on two screens on your desk, and read 13 and read 14 immediately. So you can see what is the allegory and how Sukadeva Goswami unpacks that allegory in chapter 14. And I'll explain you one verse, today's verse, and you can do the rest at your own time. So the allegory that he picks up is, you know, about the traveling, somebody who's traveling inside the forest and kind of loses his wife and then gets entangled in the forest. And then he starts taking the forest where he is now as a forest of enjoyment. And that's the title of the chapter, the forest of enjoyment. So he starts taking the forest as a place of enjoyment, unfortunately forgetting that the forest was not his destination. It was a journey through the forest, but the destination was outside the forest. But he gets bogged down in the forest and starts enjoying. And he wants to enjoy, notwithstanding that there are calamities in the forest. And this is when Raghugana gives one after the other the figurative symbolism of what those miseries are in the forest. So for example, now picture is a forest. There are snakes that can bite us. There is wild animals, ferocious animals that can kill us. Then there are dark holes which are covered by grass where we can just fall into and not being able to come out. There is heat, there is cold, there is distress every moment. But the lost traveler thinks that this is a place of enjoyment and he gets entangled there. So this is the allegory that he gives in 13. Then after that, actually, although it was only an allegory, Raghuguna gets enlightened with the transcendental knowledge through the figurative story and becomes Krishna conscious. And for our benefit, Maharaj Parikshit at the end of chapter 13 asked Vasudeva Goswami to unpack that allegory in terms of, can you tell that story in a real way, what is happening? For whose benefit? Our benefit, because he had also understood it. But he knew that most of the people in Kali Yuga will struggle. So in chapter 13, that's why I'm saying is the allegory. Chapter 14 is the real story of how somebody, Grihastha, gets entangled in that ashram, thinking that there is all in all, or Grihamedi, not knowing that there is just the journey, not the destination. No? So that's the beauty of this part. So that takes us to today's verse. Let's just look at today's verse, what is happening. So if we look at, actually, if we go back to chapter 13, and then for your reference, if you look at text number 11, let me read it out. So it's easy, so we can correlate it. Chapter 14, just bear with me. 13:11. Yeah, so this is chapter 13:11, and that correlates to 14:25 for today's verse. Yeah, so I'm reading 13:11. I think it was 13:11. Yeah. Sometimes the living entity is busy counteracting the natural disturbances of freezing cold, scorching heat, strong wind, excessive rainfall, and so forth. This is the allegory. When he is unable to do so, he becomes very unhappy. Sometimes he is cheated in business transactions one after the other. In this way, by cheating, living entities create enmity amongst themselves. So in that allegory, sometimes he also brings out the real life as well. So all in all, then when we compare it to 25 now, you'll see the resemblance. Yeah? In 25 he says, being unable to protect himself from the threefold miseries of material existence, the conditioned soul becomes very morose and lives a life of lamentation. These threefold miseries are misery suffered by mental calamity at the hands of the demigods, such as freezing wind and scorching heat, miseries offered by other living entities, and miseries arising from the mind and body themselves. So, today's lecture will be kind of miserable because we are going to talk about a lot of miseries. What can I do? Prabhupada talks about miseries in his portfolio. And Prabhupada says, the word he chooses is that miseries offered by other living entities. Not afflicted, but offered by other living entities. So this is the miserable condition of this forest of enjoyment. Miseries will come. We don't have to say welcome, but they will come. That's just the nature of this material world. So, we'll talk about that. And don't choose the messenger. No? Because I'm just sharing with you what I have understood, you know, from these sections and not from my... And this is one section of Bhagavatam that I have got full realizations. Generally, when we give Bhagavatam lectures, we say we don't have realizations, but we are telling you from what we have heard from Acharyas. But when it comes from sharing with you what miseries are, I can speak from my heart. And I'm sure most of you can also, you know, resonate with it, because it's not mythological at all. It's not theoretical at all. I'm sure we have been pinched one or the other time, if not daily, then definitely very, very regularly. Yeah? That's the situation of the material world. So, and when I said don't shoot the messenger, you know, I didn't just say it in jest. You know, there was some seriousness in it, because actually, if you think of it, in the olden days, you know, those authoritative dictatorial, you know, leaders, they would shoot the messenger, you know, if they were the bearer of the bad news. And that's where this idiom comes, don't shoot the messenger. If they were carrying any bad news, sometimes the, you know, authoritative leaders would shoot them. Of course, in the modern times, you know, messengers don't get shot. But the shooting may be replaced with labeling. The shooting of the bad messenger, or the messenger getting the bad news, can be replaced with labeling. And what do I mean by that? For example, especially, you know, we experience this in preaching as well. No? If you think of it, our scriptures are laden with lot of things that talks about the bad in the material world. Actually, the material world is bad. That's the starting point. Now, it's a place of misery. It's an ocean of misery. But if we go and, you know, speak about these things to the outside world, you know, that topics like birth, okay, birth is probably fine, but death, old age, disease, it's a place of misery. People label us as pessimistic. Then why do you have to, especially death? There's people dying everywhere at the moment because of the pandemic, but still nobody wants to talk about the fact that death will come. It's a topic that is almost like taboo. You know, you don't talk about it, especially, you know, in the non-devotee associations. For devotees, we talk about this very freely. We get so used to this. You know, that death will come, prepare yourself, But we can't go and tell someone in the office, you know, you'll die one day, you know, prepare yourself. Then we'll set you. So these topics are, you know, if we talk topics like this, we will be labeled as very, very pessimistic. And does that mean that our acharyas, Jagat Bharat, Chula Prabhupada, you know, all the other acharyas, does that mean they were pessimistic when they talked about these topics? Well, no. The fact is that what they are presenting is that it's a factual statement that there is misery. No, this Dukhalyam world is a place of misery. But our scriptures tell us that these facts are only given for some very positive message to be broadcasted. And that is the message that, yes, we have the right to enjoy. But there is a right way to enjoy. Enjoying is our rightful constitutional position. But there is a right way to enjoy. Not in the forest. No? When there are so many things that can attack us and destroy our happiness very, very, no, stubbornly. So there is a right to enjoy and there is a right way to enjoy. So that's why we talk about these bad things at the beginning and then we tell the solution in terms of the good things. Now, let's talk about, as I said, that this is titled as Forest of Enjoyment, but actually it's a forest of suffering, ocean of suffering. Now, is this material world really only a place of misery? Is there nothing else but just a place of misery? Because we have to be careful with this, you know, when we articulate it to the outside world. What is this place? Undoubtedly, this is a place of misery. No, nobody will deny it, no? Especially in a devotee congregation. But is this material world only a place of misery and nothing else? In his SSR CD, you know, Radha Gopinath Prabhu gives the example when he explains Dukhalayam Ashashvatam. Dukha means misery, Alayam means place. So Dukhalayam means a place of misery. And to bring his point, he gives the analogy of the Himalaya. So Him means snow, ice, so Alaya means a place. So Himalaya is a place of snow. When you look at the Himalaya mountains, it is a place of snow, Himalaya. So therefore this material world is Dukhalaya, a place of misery. Now, is Himalaya a place of snow only and nothing else? Well, that's not true, right? Because, you know, Himalaya is a very, you know, it has got stunning beauty. It is a playground for the adventurous mountaineers. It's a residence for many other living entities, including human beings. It's a place of breathtaking beauty. So, yes, it is full of snow, but it has got other things as well. Now, similarly, this material world is a place of misery. But at the same time, it can also offer us some sense of enjoyment in some respects. So when we say this is Dukhalaya, what we actually mean is that miseries are intrinsic in this material world. Just as snow is intrinsic in the Himalayas. Although it has got some place of enjoyment, not temporary, temporary enjoyments to offer, but if somebody at the Himalayas doesn't prepare for the snow, or worst of even the world doesn't even expect snow, then he is in disaster. Then he is doomed, because somehow or the other, you know, he'll be in trouble, or possibly more than trouble, fatal, because it's just going to be absolutely freezing cold. So yes, Himalayas has got other things to offer time to time, but one has to be aware that it's a place of snow. You can't escape. Similarly, in the material world, miseries are intrinsic. Prabhupada says, somebody will offer it to you if you don't take it. Other living entities will offer it to you. So yes, now, there are beautiful things in this material world as well, such as the beautiful sunset, the rose looks beautiful, the rose is fragrant, absolute placid, tranquil lakes, all those things are there. And Krishna says that these are the spark of my splendor. So they are beautiful because it's a spark of Krishna. But if somebody gets mistaken for those beautiful, attractive things and starts taking this material world as our eventual home, then we are in for disaster eventually, because miseries will keep coming in terms of Adi Bhautik, Adi Devik, Adi Yatni. And if you look at the TV news, if you look at YouTube or Channel 7, Channel 9, whatever, what do they show us? What do they show us? They show us these three only. So as much as they label this as pessimistic when we talk about these topics, but actually if you look at the broadcasting every day, it is laden with these three bad news. What is that? Environmental problems. Cyclone in Gujarat at the moment. Bushfire in Australia. Last year, the bushfire was so bad, the year before last, yeah? You know that, I clearly remember when the news was on CNN, the reporter said, Australia is on fire. Now that's such a funny words, yeah? Australia is on fire. That's how bad the bushfire was. So this is what? This is the Adi Bhauti, environmental problems. Problems caused by demigods, through natural disturbances. What else does the news show us? Interpersonal problems. Interpersonal problems are the Adi Bhautika problems. Problems caused and offered by others, as Prabhupada says. And then there are those psychophysical or psychological problems. Those are the Adi Atmic problems, that are caused by our own body and mind. So the news is always bombarded with these three problems. It's just that, they say what has happened, whereas for us it is more about what can happen if we don't prepare well for the problems. So to summarize that part, that the miseries are intrinsic in this material world. It will come. If we don't prepare for those miseries, then we are in disaster. We can elevate ourselves from these miseries and still enjoy the things that Krishna has given us, but not to be mistaken it as a place of enjoyment only. There is a higher and a different destination that, of course, as devotees, we know where we want to go. Now, but notwithstanding all that, what happens, we know, as Jagannath is telling Rahuguna, that people get bogged down in preparing a comfortable life amongst the misery. I remember when I migrated to Australia, you know, almost like 20 years ago, almost more than 20 years ago, when this question was asked to me, why did you migrate? One of my first responses, you know, intuitively was because of the convenience. Coming from an underdeveloped country, coming here when everything works, you know, people stop at the traffic light, you go to the government department, you know, you don't have to bribe. They will give you whatever they, you know, you want. Everything works. There's a supermarket. People will queue up. Even if there's three people, they will still queue up. No? So things work. It was very convenient for me and for others. No? Like that. So it was a place of convenience. Later on, you know, as I continued my journey with a decent job, you know, and then the money started coming in, then life became very comfortable. Could afford the comforts, you know, that I would have, that I wanted, you know, having a house with an AC, a nice car, remote control, and then came Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, all these things, you know, just started making life very comfy. You know. 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G, Prabhuji, Mataji, you know, just kept going on and on, one after the other. So like that, it was a very comfy, you know, situation to be here. Later on I realized, you know, after working my back off for 20 years, then I realized, and I went back to almost like my primary or my secondary school, you know, when the teacher used to tell us that if you don't study hard, then you will be sweating in the field under the scorching heat. You will be sweating in the field under the scorching heat. And if you study well, then you will be nicely living in a comfortable office where there will be air conditioning. I remember that statement. So fast forward 20 years now, when I'm today working in a comfortable office with nice AC, my biggest realization is, I'm still sweating. Not from the scorching heat, but from the scorching stress. And that is the reality for most of us. We may not be suffering from the heat, but the suffering is still there. And actually, I can't think of the word, but interestingly, you know, office is the most dangerous place at the moment. Because they say if the virus goes through the air conditioning system, you know, it can just, the whole building can be a cluster. Whereas, if you are out in the farm, like Kesha Prabhu, in Hare Krishna Valley, when we went to Hare Krishna Valley after the first round of super, super duper lockdowns, he said, what is coronavirus? Because it's like, you know, okay, there was risk at the farm, but of course not as much as, you know, if we are living in Albert Park, when we have to cross the road, when we see somebody coming on the streets, we would cross the road to the other side, so we don't, within 1,500 meters of another person, not 1.5, you know, but 1 kilometer distance from another person. So like that, so that became the most, you know, terrible place to be in, and still, you know, most of us don't go back to the office. So yes, comfortable misery is still a misery, you know, that's the point. You know. We sometimes, you know, the reason we get allured to it is because the physical comforts are easily visible. There is nice car, there is nice house, there is TV, there is spa, there is sauna, there is holidays, there is, you know, all these things are comfortably visible. So it's, you know, it feels good, we get allured to it. But the cost of it is invisible. And the cost comes out in terms of some misery, some distress. My wife was telling me a couple of days ago that it was a little warm, not last week or week before last, when it was a little warm. Then she said, we don't necessarily need the AC because it's not good for the body. Somewhere she has read, you know, that air conditioning gives all these side effects that it's not good for the body. Then last week it was super cold, and I thought I'd turn the heater on. Then she said the artificial heating is also not good. So, yes, the heater is there, the AC is there in the house. And that's visible, that comfort is visible. But intrinsic to it is the side effect that is not good for us. And that is invisible. So we get allured to the visible, and we are now oblivious to the invisible. When I was attending that naturopath course with, what was his name? Mother Kirtipa, and he was explaining, you know, that how something that we take it as daily comfort. He was telling us the ill effects of it. Now, when we buy vegetables these days and fruits, he was saying it is already half junk, and we know this. You know, the best part of the apple is actually the skin. But in the modern times, we have to throw the skin off because it's just so heavily waxed, so it looks very shiny, you know, and doesn't decay. So we have to peel the skin and throw it off, and then they eat. So you know, the fruits and the vegetables, he said, are already half rubbish by the time we buy them. And then what do we do in modern times? We put those vegetables in the fridge. Now don't ask me how, but he was explaining that the enzymes in the vegetables and the fruits are killed when they are refrigerated. He said vegetables and fruits should never be killed, never be put in the refrigerator. So the something that is already half killed, we have destroyed it more just by the simple fact of putting it in the fridge. And then what do we do? Some fruits we don't, some vegetables we don't, but sometimes we also thaw it in the microwave or in hot water. That kills it more. But most of the times we don't do it, so we cook it now. The way we cook it, he said, is terrible, because you know, vegetables should not be cooked in oil. Vegetables should just be steamed, and then you can, you know, get whatever. I'm not a cook, so I'll go not go there. But he said vegetables, when you cook it in the oil, it's even more nutrients are killed. And then to add to it, we cook it the wrong way, in the wrong vessel. No? Then he was talking about which is the right vessel and the wrong vessel. So we buy the wrong food, we put it in the wrong place, we cook it the wrong way, in the wrong vessel. After that, which is we have pretty much just butchered the fruit and the vegetable, or the vegetables in this case, after that what happens? We put the leftover in the fridge. This goes the cycle, the boomerang cycle. Take two. We put it in the fridge, we take it out. Food should never be reheated. Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita as well. Food is only good for 3 hours, after that it should not be touched. So this food, which we have put in the fridge, we reheat in the microwave. This is the comfortable misery. We put it in the microwave and then eat it on a plastic plate. That food that is already heated is now getting the toxin resins, you know, from the plastics that we eat on. Terrible food, terrible eating. But we think we are living comfortably in Albert Park because, you know, there's a nice modern apartment with all the appliances that we could think of, which can be enviable by those who don't have it. But what we are actually doing ourselves is just killing ourselves, you know, with all these modern allurements. So this is called comfortable misery. In a comfortable, you know, Albert Park place. In Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3, when Vidura meets Maitreya Muni, you know, after he leaves Hastinapur for pilgrimage, Maitreya Muni asked Maitreya Muni some brilliant questions. You know, this is chapter 5. And one of the fundamental questions that he asked, and I'm trying to memorize that verse, so I'll see if I can bring it up. If not, then I've written it down as well. He says, and I'll unpack it for you here. He says, Sukhaya karmani karoti loko natte sukham vandeta uparamam va vindeta bhuyas tat eva dukham yad atra yuktam bhagavan vadenaha. Beautiful verse. This is Vidura. What is he saying? Sukhaya karmani karoti loko. Sukhaya. For happiness. Karoti loko. Sukhaya karmani karoti. Karmani means that karma, that activity. People are working hard and hard and hard and hard for what? Sukhaya. Sukhaya karmani karoti loko. Everybody loko. Everybody is engaged in some karma just to find some happiness. Sukhaya. But what happens? Atai sukham. You got the meaning. There is no sukham for them. Naite natai sukham vanyan. Uparam amma, and there is no uparam as well, there is no satiation, there is no detachment. They do the activity thinking it will give them happiness, looking for happiness. They don't find happiness, natai sukham vanyat uparam amma, and there is no detachment from that activity as well. They are still in the forest of material enjoyment trying to find happiness, continuously doing the same thing. Two side effects of that activity: no happiness, no detachment. Now, if this was the only two, it was probably not that bad. It gets worse. Third line. Vindeta bhuyas tada eva dukham. That activity
which they are doing to find happiness, which is not giving them happiness, and they are neither getting detached from that activity. In fact, on the contrary, not they buyas, tada eva dukkha. It actually gives them dukkha. Unbelievable how Vidura takes it. That activity that people are doing to find happiness doesn't give them happiness but causes them, and neither causes them satiation from that activity, actually ends up giving them misery at the end. Krishna tells us that material enjoyment is like nectar at the beginning and poison at the end. This is exactly what Vidura is saying here. That Vindeta Bhuyas Tada Eva Dukkham, it leads us to Dukkha. Yadatra Yuktam Bhagavan Vadenaha. Oh, Maitreya Muni, what is the solution to this? What is the solution for this? So similarly, so this is the very, very resembling to the energy that we want happiness, we do some karma, thinking it will give us happiness, but it doesn't give us happiness. And we continue to do it, thinking that we will become happy, but happiness doesn't come. Then what do we do? We have to fight it. We have to fight our obnoxious desires, to stay away from Krishna, and enjoy separately. We have to get rid of this tendency. How do we do this? Now, to fight an enemy, we have to know where the enemy is. If we have to fight coronavirus, the government tells us where the coronavirus is, where is the cluster. So avoid that area, don't go to that area. But the problem with sense enjoyment is that enemy is inside us. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, 4, this is all due to lust. And the residing place of lust is Indriyani Manobuddhir, in the mind, in the senses, and in the intelligence. This is where the lust resides. So because the enemy is inside us, we cannot run away from the enemy. Because wherever we run, the enemy will run with us. This world is sometimes compared to the forest fire, the blazing material forest fire. So if the fire was outside us, then we could have probably flee from the fire, and escape the fire. But this fire is in the forest, in the inner forest of material blazing fire. We cannot escape it. We can't run away from it. And in our endeavor to fight it alone, it can be seen as very painful and pointless to some extent as well. Because if you picturize it, there's a blazing forest fire, which was recently in here. We cannot fight that kind of blazing forest fire with bare hands. It's almost like pointless, painful and pointless. Cannot do it with the hand. We need some help to fight the fire. So where does the help come from now? We cannot burn this forest fire alone, bare hand. It's painful. So where does the help come from? Where do we find the happiness? Where do we find that solution of the trying to get rid of this enemy of allurement for material enjoyment? Our scriptures give us again two metaphors. And we'll unpack both of them. And you know this, what I'm just sharing with you again, for your refreshment. First one is ocean of misery. Second one is fire of transcendental knowledge. Now, our acharyas explained that these analogies are progressive in nature. Ocean of misery, when we say this material world is an ocean of misery, and when we take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, then this ocean of misery reduces to the size of the footprint of a calf, then we can just step over it, no big deal at all. But when we step over this, when we step over a table, when we cross, how do we cross a turbulent ocean? Through a very steady kind of ship, An expert boatman can take us through the other side of the ocean. But when we cross the turbulent ocean, the ocean remains. The ocean doesn't disappear, it remains. So what it tells us is that, when we advance in our Krishna consciousness, the miseries will be there. But the knowledge, our bhakti, association of devotees, shelter of the Guru Maharaj, of Krishna, elevates us above misery, so we can learn to tolerate them and learn amidst the misery. If you want to live in the Himalayas, then you need to have the expertise to live within these terms, with these terms. We can't escape it. No matter how much we scale up the mountain, the snow will always be there. So Krishna consciousness teaches us at the initial stage to elevate ourselves above the ocean of misery. Leave the ocean there, it will not dissipate. But we can elevate us above the ocean.
And then as we progress more and more and get fired up in transcendental knowledge, which is a fire of transcendental knowledge. Why fire of transcendental knowledge? What does fire do? If you put debris in the fire will burn the debris to ashes. The debris will not remain anymore. It will absolutely become ashes. So the fire of transcendental knowledge can burn our anarthas, can burn our aparas, can burn our papam. No, it attacks the root cause of the misery. The avidya, the bijam, the papam, the putam. It burns all that, and therefore there is no repetition of an action that will eventually give us some bad reactions. So one, bhakti, what it does, it elevates us from misery, and it also can eliminate our misery. Elevation through the fire, through the energy of the ocean of misery, and elimination through the energy of the fire of transcendental knowledge. So miseries can be, we can elevate ourselves from misery, and we can also actually eliminate miseries from our life. That is the power of Krishna consciousness. That is the power of Krishna consciousness. So who gives us that knowledge? Where do we get that fire of transcendental knowledge? No, we all sing daily in the morning. Samsara gavana ravida loka tarnaya karunya ghana ghana tatasya kalyana gunana vasya vande gurau shri charnaya vindam. What do we sing? Samsara gavana ravida loka. Samsara, this samsara, no, in Bengali chain, no, this samsara, I'll try to. This samsara, this material world, samsara, dhava, nala. Dhava is forest and nala is fire. No? We say bhumirapa nalo fire. That nalo is the fire. Yeah? So samsara, dhava, nala. This world is a fire of material miseries. Samsara, dhava, nala, nidha, loka. And the loka, and everybody is afflicted in this misery. Then, next time. Taranaya, karunya, ghana, ghana, ta. Karan is not the liberation, the protection. Karanaya karunya, out of compassion, mercy. Who comes? The spiritual master. Just like ghana ghana atva. Ghan ghan, you know that sound comes when the clouds are erupting. So just as if the material world is an ocean of fire, that big, then we need an ocean of rainfall for the fire to be extinguished. And that fire can be extinguished by the fire of transcendental knowledge by the spiritual master. Vande Gurav Shri Charanaravindam. So we take shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. And then the question becomes, where does the spiritual master get the empowerment to eradicate, you know, to extinguish this such a big fire? Because the fire is so big, the whole material world is Dhavanaralida Loka. And then you need an ocean of rainfall to extinguish this fire. Well, the spiritual master can do it, but surely he is getting it from somewhere, that much of rain to extinguish such a big fire. Who gives him this? Who gives him this much of empowerment, you know, of this much of ocean of shower? Praptasya kalyana gunana vasya. Praptasya kalyana. Prap means to receive, and kalyana means, you know, auspicious benedictions. Where does he get his benedictions from? Guna na vasya. Guna is the quality. Where does it get these qualities from? The person who is the ocean of qualities. Avasya means ocean. So the person who is an ocean of mercy, which is the Lord Himself. Now we'll bring it all together. Yeah? So the person who is let's actually start from bottom up. This material world is a blazing fire, no, as the size of the ocean. And the people inside this fire are struggling from miseries. To extinguish that miseries, we need an ocean of rainfall. And the ocean of rainfall is given to us as a fire of transcendental knowledge by the spiritual master. Where does the spiritual master get so much of benediction? From that person who is an ocean of mercy. And that is Krishna, Guna Navastya. Shri Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinavandhu Jagat. Sri Krishna, Karuna Sindhu. Sindhu is that ocean. And Karuna is that compassion. So the Lord is an ocean of mercy. If we don't take advantage of this Krishna consciousness, then Prabhupada says, what was the last line in the Popam? Remember? I asked you to remember. I said it's a punchy ending. If you don't take advantage of Krishna consciousness, if you don't take advantage of the ocean of mercy, if you don't take advantage of the fire of the transcendental knowledge, then this material world is a place of misery. And Prabhupada ended with brownie points for who can become. There is no escape. There is no escape because it will come one way or the other. So dukhalyam ashvashvatam. I will end with, after hearing that, I told you it's a miserable discussion, I'll tell you something that is more miserable than all the miseries we have spoken about. Because what is the biggest misery? And you'll be amazed what is the biggest misery. This thing getting entangled in the material world, you know, and looking for enjoyment here and there are all miserable, but there is the, you know, the king of misery. What is that? Adukham mahadukham dukha dukha karam yatha kacha artham. I'm going to do that one. Kacha artham vishvitam ratna harinam eva ke manam. Shri, you know this verse? You know this man? Sing it. Sorry? Say. Where's the mic? Oh, hang on. Give us the microphone, please. No, hang on. The microphone is there. Can you sing it again from the beginning with the microphone? Yeah, with the microphone.
How to come,
this is the power of Samitra Mangalati, even in the pandemic. Is this one? I've lost the battery, no? Oh, that is taken away. Is it? Can you hear me? Okay, this is that. No, I've lost you again, right? Hare Krishna? Yeah. No. Miseries. Caused by other living, non-living entities. Environmental problems. I think we are back on. So, what is this saying? Aho dukkha. How miserable. Maha dukkha. Most miserable. Dukkha maha dukkham. What misery? Most miserable. What is that? Dukkha dukkha taram yatha. Oh, yathas. There are other miseries, but this is so miserable that it is most miserable. That this is the misery of the mother of all miseries. Dukkha dukkha taram yatha. What is that? Kachartam vishvartam ratna. If somebody mistakes the holy name, Harinameva Kaivalam, if somebody mistakes the holy name to be just some ordinary sound vibration and misses the golden opportunity to tap into this golden solution, Ratna is gold. To tap into this golden solution in Kali Yuga to get out of this ocean of misery and mistakes it for Kacharatam. No? Kacharatam is broken pieces of glass. If somebody mistakes this holy name Hare Krishna Maha Mantra just as ordinary sound vibration or does not take the opportunity to dive deeper into this Maha Mantra to take advantage of this absolute bargain that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us, no? Christmas sale in Kali Yuga going on, buy one, get 10 free kind of thing. If we don't take advantage of all that and mistake it as just as some ordinary sound vibration or some Bollywood song or we chant inattentively and all that, then my dear friends, that is the most miserable thing in the material world. Not taking the holy name seriously. Yes, they are miseries. But if we take the holy name, shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, shelter of the sound vibration of the holy name, then there is escape. Otherwise, Prabhupada warns us that there is absolutely no escape. So please chant attentively. Radha Shri Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki. Yeah. About 3 minutes for some questions, comments, and corrections. Let's go.
Hare Krishna. Thanks, Prabhu. Thanks for being the messenger today. That was a very nice class. Thank you very much for that. There's one thing that I would like to just add to that. We understand that there is miseries in this material world, and being devotees, we actually appreciate that there's miseries, but we also understand that there are certain levels of enjoyment as well. The relationship between a parent and a child, and so many different things, and as you pointed out also, you know, the beauty in nature and so on. So one of the things that the spiritual master gives us, and the teachings in Krishna consciousness gives us, to counteract or to actually, because we're not fanatics in Krishna consciousness that we see everything negatively. When we become devotees and when we learn about Krishna consciousness, there's a thing that the spiritual master and the teachings of Krishna give us, and that's gratitude. Gratitude. So when we have different things within nature, we see God behind those wonderful things. So when we see everything as Krishna being behind everything, the love for our children, the beauty in nature, creativity, the things that we do that give us pleasure, prasadam that we eat. If we have that gratitude, understanding that yes, the enjoyment in this material world is temporary, but in the same token, we're grateful for the Lord to give us the things that we've got. So Prabhupada was always in this mood. You never saw Prabhupada taking prasadam and he didn't enjoy it. You know, there are many things when he went for a walk in the mornings, on morning walks, you could see that Prabhupada actually enjoyed the beauty to the extent where he actually even commented on the beauty of other people. So the point is that as a devotee, we should always remember that gratitude is a very fundamental thing in our devotional service, and that's been given to us by our spiritual teachers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you, Brady. That's, I think only one mic works at a time, is it?
Yeah,
okay, awesome. Only one. Yeah, thank you, Bhakta Prabhu, for that brilliant input. And that's what we were discussing as well, that Dukhalaya means, you know, it is, the Dukh is intrinsic, but that doesn't mean it's only a place of bliss. Just as Himalaya means, you know, Vishnu is intrinsic, but it's not only a place of Vishnu. There is breathtaking beauty in the Himalayas. So definitely this place is a spark of his splendor. So thank you for getting that. Very nice. Anybody else? Yes, Sivya. Oh, maybe you look to get one of those.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice presentation and very nice class. Very inspiring. one of the things you mentioned in the class was that this place is miserable, and one of the process to avoid that is to, you know, adopt the process of devotional service, which eliminates or gets rid of all your bad side of the coin. So how do we perceive or how do we accept that, seeing that those who are actually performing devotional service, maybe, you know, that long period of time, they are, you know, for example, our great sannyasis or those who are, you know, like, you know, very been practicing for such a long time, and we see their physical suffering in the body. How do we put that two things together? One side is, okay, devotional service takes away your bad karma and you don't suffer. At the same time, we're seeing that physical suffering. How do we see that as well?
Yeah. And I don't know the answer, but you're asking for my benefit. So the question is, you know, we say that devotional service is the solution, but on the other hand, when we look at the reality, there are a lot of examples of devotees practicing Krishna consciousness for years and years, and yet they go through, you know, this physical difficulties, or how do we reconcile the two? Well, there's various perspectives to this, you know, and I can bring out one. You know. My understanding is that, of course, we take everything as the mercy of the Lord, so the calamities, and we are not at the level of Queen Kunti, you know, when we can pray for calamities, but she reminds us that devotees take calamities as absolute opportunity. I remember Gauranga Prabhu giving one lecture, and he made this brilliant statement. Let me just try to recall it. He said that bhakti is the art of converting curses into blessings. What a brilliant statement. Bhakti is the art of converting curses into blessings. And this was in the context of, again, coming back again to the Sri Srimad Bhagavatam, when Vidura was, I'll explain, blessings, yeah. Curses, yeah. C-U-R-E-S, yes. So, you know, there when we, you know, again in the context of Srimad Bhagavatam, I'll come to you on some, let me just set the scene. He said that, you know, when Vidura was invited for consultancy, you know, by Dhritarashtra, in terms of, you know, all the bad things that was happening in Hastinapur, Vidura being the, you know, being a very wise sage, he was asked for some consultancy advice. And he spoke some exacting words, and that kind of annoyed Duryodhana as expected. And then he chastised and arrogantly rebuked Vidura, insulted him. So, we pick it from there. When Vidura was insulted, what does he do? And that insult aspect is one of the calamities. We are talking about people who have been in Krishna consciousness for 40 years. Let's extrapolate it to somebody who is Krishna consciousness inside out. Vidura is Yamaraj, who is an eternal associate of the Lord. And then, again, comparing the 30, 40 years of Krishna consciousness now to the Pandavas, who are again his eternal associates. And then, again, comparing the 30 years of Krishna consciousness now to Mata Sita and Lakshman, who again go through a lot of calamities. And Prahlad Maharaj, who are these people? You know, they go through a lot of calamities. So what kind of calamities do we go through at the moment? Maybe we can't see an aeroplane, or maybe some physical, you know. Of course, they are all, you know, we sympathize with all that, undoubtedly, you know, it's an event of sorrow. But we can measure the two calamities. So in that, you know, when Vidura, he takes the, you know, the insult as an orchestration by the Lord for Vidura to leave Hastinapur. And being a wise devotee, he conveys that curse from Duryodhana into a blessing in disguise. And what is the blessing? What are the things he sees when he is cursed? This is a golden opportunity to escape the woe. Who wants to fight against Krishna being a pure devotee? Let's leave Hastinapur now because Duryodhana has told me to get out. I'll leave Hastinapur and I don't have to fight against Krishna. Because he has eaten the salt of the Kauravas, so no, he'll have to fight on that side. So he doesn't want to do it. So he conveys that insult of Duryodhana into a blessing to leave Hastinapur to escape the war. Second, he thinks out of his humility that because I have been associating with the demons of Duryodhana in the camp, in the company, I have lost my pious credits. And because of losing my piety, he has not lost his credits, but he thinks like that. And because I have lost my piety, I am not qualified to face Krishna. I cannot show my face to Krishna at the moment because I am unqualified. So what will I do? I will take this opportunity to go on pilgrimage and intensify my Krishna consciousness. Because what happens at the place, what is the duty of the pilgrim? To worship the Lord and to listen and discuss about Krishna Katha. That is the duty, you know, that is what a pilgrim's duty is. It is not to go to Vrindavan and take photos of MVT restaurant and put it on Facebook. That's not why we go to Vrindavan. Although we do that, but that's not why we go to Vrindavan. We go to Vrindavan to hear from the sages who reside there, from our spiritual masters. So he goes on pilgrimage, you know, to Prabhasa Kshetra and then further on to get more intensified in Krishna consciousness. Then he sees that now Duryodhana's atrocity has magnified to such an extent that I don't need to fight this war anymore. I don't need my bow because the Lord is going to finish him off very soon now. It has reached the climax. So and so forth. So many reasons are just pouring out in the Purport Swajra Prabhupada. But in essence, what I say is,
is that the devotee sees calamities not as opportunities to intensify our Krishna consciousness. Now when we extrapolate it to the examples that you gave, you know, in the modern times of great sannyasis struggling and all that, well, to me, they take it as a blessing of the Lord. I definitely hear this time out from my Guru Maharaj whenever he goes through a lot of struggle, through his hearing problems. Recently he had skin rashes and all that. And never one time I have heard him complaining that why is the Lord almost like a broken stone in my preaching. I've never heard him say like that or even think like that. It's always like, yes, this is a great reminder that I have to get out of the material. This is a great reminder that this is not my place. Or this is a great reminder to help me intensify my Krishna consciousness and give it to others. So we have to, at the end of the day, see it as the will of the Lord. And we don't know sometimes what is the will of the Lord until a little bit later. But the Lord always has a plan that He orchestrates for the benefit of His pure devotees. Yeah? And that was the case for Prahlad Maharaj, that was the case for Pandavas, that was the case for Vidura, that was the case for any other exalted devotee that we see in our scripture, always goes through this experiencing of calamity so that they can show to us that what to do during calamity, how to take calamity. Look at Japata Goswami Maharaj. Who else but him is best placed to show us what does Krishna consciousness mean at every single step? Whether you are walking, talking, running, handicapped, it just doesn't matter. He is just so much, oh my God, erupting with power that is so contagious. The devotional service is so contagious just when you see Maharaj. And Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj, preach no matter what. Examples. Of course, we have to be cautious sometimes as well. But there's a lot of lessons to be learned from these senior devotees going through hardship. So that it's a source of inspiration for us to march forward more and more. I was just reading Prabhupada Dhinamrita 2 days ago with somebody, or discussing with somebody, and this point came through. And this is a relatively new person in his Krishna consciousness. And he's reading Prabhupada Dhinamrita exam because Adi Purusha Prabhu tells them they have to read because there is an exam. I said that with the tongue in my cheek. Yeah. It was not to criticize it. It was a joke. So he said, when he's reading Prabhupada, this is chapter 1 only, when Prabhupada is getting onto the Jaladutta and going to Boston and New York and so forth, Pennsylvania, he says that, oh my God, Prabhupada went through so much struggle and I can resonate with it. Had Prabhupada taken a flight from Calcutta to New York and lived in a hotel and everything was arranged for him, how many of us would have been able to relate to his journey to say, oh, he had the money to do it. Now he would easily detach from his family because he had the money to do so. But we don't have the money. We have mortgage and children. Well, Prabhupada also had mortgage and children. Actually, we may be better off materially than him because Krishna just pulled everything material from him time to time. Yeah, maybe don't play with that screen. Huh? Otherwise, I may lose the online. Did I lose the online audience because the child was playing with the screen? Maybe it's Krishna's will. Okay, I'm back on. I take it as a blessing. Sorry, what was I saying? I lost it completely now. So the person could resonate with Prabhupada's difficulties to say, I'm also going through the difficult journey and therefore this is for me. There is something for me through his life experience that I can resemble with. So similarly, when senior devotees are put through miseries, we have to take it as the will of the Lord for us to learn a lesson. And Prabhupada in somewhere in Canto 1 or Canto 2, I think Canto 2, where he gives the example of the daughter-in-law. Remember this analogy? That the mother-in-law teaches good behavior to the daughter. Now this is kind of Indian psychology, yeah. The mother-in-law teaches good behavior to the daughter-in-law through her own daughter. So it will be like an indirect speech, to say, daughter-in-law in Hindi is bahu, Betty's daughter, oh Betty, aisa kar le. Matlab, she's talking to the daughter, but she is implying it for the daughter-in-law. So Prabhupada writes there, similarly the Lord sometimes has messages for his devotees and non-devotees through the pure devotees. Because other than the pure devotees, who else can withstand that kind of difficulty? Huh? It will be very difficult if what a lot of our senior spiritual masters go through, if Krishna was to use us for that particular show time, some of us may actually run from Krishna consciousness to say, no, this is too much now. So a person who is at that level can only partake in Krishna's leela for the message to be shown. You know, in Bollywood sometimes, you know, when the director is looking for a very super good villain, it's a paradox, right? Super good villain. When the director is looking for a very good actor and he is not able to find the villain, he will choose one of his best actors to play the role of the bad actor because he knows he can play it. So the actor becomes, the main hero becomes the villain because he needs somebody who can act well. So here when Krishna is doing his leela in his movie of pastimes, the person who can play that role with him for that many, you know, time has to be somebody who is very close with him, who can withstand all that he has to act on. Because Prabhupada writes in Canto 2 again that the devotees are amiable to the will of the Lord. No? Amiable means what? That whichever way Krishna tosses and tends them, he is okay with them. Use me as you wish. So only pure devotees can handle that kind of pressure. No? Apart from Prahlad Maharaj, who else can withstand that kind of torture from his own father? No, people, you know, we run away from Krishna consciousness, or we. Some people run away from Krishna consciousness very easily. Little bit of, you know, disputes with the, some devotees, you know, and they say, this place is not for us. So I don't think we'll be able to survive. I won't be able to survive if I was thrown off the cliff or put in a cage with wild snakes. You know? I only Prahlad Maharaj can do it. So my understanding, Prabhupada, as you know, I'm sure you asked, you know, for the benefit of the audience, is that we have to take it as the will of the Lord, that the Lord orchestrates something for the messages to be broadcasted to the else, you know, to the rest of us, to say how to do Krishna consciousness in times of trials and tribulations, as well as in times of joy. Mostly for us there is joy, which is good news. Okay, I think we'll stop here, because it's almost 9 o'clock, I'm sure. You all are hungry for some spiritual enjoyment of Prasada. And I'll let you know. Prabhupati? Oh, sorry, Sivya had a question. You always have a question. Those want to lift and lift, but Sivya always has a question, so I have to. Sorry, Sivya, my mistake. No one?
Thank you for a nice class, Prabhu. My question is, you were saying that to cross the ocean is, so we see that devotees sometimes have the knowledge, like him. What else is needed with transcendental knowledge?
Yeah, so how you were cutting in and out. So your question was what, how to use the transcendental knowledge? Yeah, you speak without the microphone, so it's...
My question was, what else is needed in transcendental knowledge?
So what else is needed in transcendental knowledge? What is needed is the application of that knowledge. So we... Yeah, we our scriptures give us the transcendental knowledge to help us escape this ocean of misery. But the knowledge on its own is jnana. When we apply that knowledge, it becomes vijnana. So there is knowledge, there is experiences. So we have to put the knowledge into practice, otherwise it's not just a book on the shelf. And you are already doing it with the able guidance of your super active mother. Coming to Mangalarti every day, taking you for book distribution and a nice prasadam, and then so many other things she does with three kids, is amazing. I know exactly how you live because you are my ex-neighbor. I only moved away from that building 4 weeks ago, so I really know your life style. So there is proper application of that knowledge. So just follow the guidance of your mom and she will guide you as you progress. But you are already doing wonderfully well. Yeah, Krishna will bless you.
Thank you. Prabhupada ji.